Hey, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about Andre Drummond and sort of what he is and sort of his malleability as a player. I wrote about this. If you're listening to this, it's either up or will be up very shortly after The Sword. And I kind of compared him to another player who we'll talk about on this show and sort of how that player was malleable over the course of his career. And how he's really found a second life and sort of why I think it's sort of different than what Drummond's going to try and do apparently. But Evan, before we hop into that, why don't you tell everyone about today's title sponsor?
Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them that Locked On sent you.
All right, and with that, we'll be back with some Andre Drummond talk.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, are you? We haven't talked about Andre in a while. Are you ready for this?
I don't know what you meant when you texted me the other day saying he was trying to be like an IG influencer. So if you want to elaborate on that real quick, yeah, no, we need to talk about him after that.
We'll do that off the air. I don't want to do this. I don't want this on my public takes record.
You don't want to be Spurch's rap persona. I get that.
Yeah, DJ Dre.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, but. When I was like, Evan, I'm writing this thing that I described as weird. I don't even know if it's actually weird, but it felt weird to me. It felt very like kind of like 3 years ago bloggy, which is like a fun space for me and try to like flex that kind of writing muscle again for a while. But when I said I want to talk about Andre Drummond, I'm writing about Andre Drummond as a comparison point to the malleability of Brook Lopez over the last several years. Your reaction was what?
When you told, like, you gave me the pitch and you said you're right about it, I'm like, and I guess I could, you could see the comparisons. I never really thought of Brook Lopez as the guy that Andre's trying to model his game off of, but
well, I don't
it's not a bad person to be trying to mimic, at least to try and get that extension, because Brook Lopez is the ideal modern center for any competing team in the NBA.
Yes, and I don't mean to compare them like apples to apples. I think the comparison for me when I started writing this and thinking about this is like Brook Lopez as we know him now is just so different than the Brook Lopez we knew in like 2012. And if you look at what Andre wants to do and what he's hinted at what he wants to do and everything, he doesn't want to be the Andre Drummond we know now. And obviously I don't think like it's going to be – he's a little earlier in his age-wise is kind of when Brook kind of had his renaissance of sorts. There's a lot of differences in sort of the context, which we'll talk about, but I think Brook is like the best case example of when a guy completely rewrites his identity as a player, and I can't think of that many other examples of guys that are able to do this. And Channing's kind of like one that also pops up just because he didn't shoot threes in college, and obviously his whole value to the Cavs at the end, besides being a great teammate, was his 3-point shooting. The kind of malleability and ability to become like a stalwart defender and like and the man Splash Mountain himself is like kind of crazy if you think about what Brook Lopez was and like with the Brooklyn Nets.
No, yeah, it's definitely interesting to think where Brook Lopez was to compare to where he is now. And he was smart in the fact that he didn't start shooting threes until the 15-16 season when he connected on 14.3% of them. So for the better part, actually no, it's a lie, in the 14-15 season he hit 10% of them, but either way, for his first six seasons he was a traditional center where he was back to the basket, post-ups, just defense and everything else. And Chris, it's funny to your point, Andre Drummond also doesn't want to be the center that you and I want him to be, where we want him to be a defensive-minded center who protects the rim, crashes the boards, and serves himself as a rim runner on offense. No, he wants to be, like you said, like Brook Lopez, where he can do a little bit of just top-flight defense and the ability to stretch the floor, which is what's going to keep Brook Lopez in the NBA for at least the foreseeable future. I mean, he's been solid for 2 years with Milwaukee now, and I don't see that changing anytime soon, just all things considered where the Bucks are at, and he's only 32 years old, and I think his game will age well. I get why Andre's trying to do it, but it also just kind of feels like too little too late. But at the same time, you really can't say too little too late, because it took Brook Lopez 10 years to complete. Well, he was remodeling it along the way after 6 years in the NBA, so maybe Andre is able to do this, but it just feels like such a stark shift for him to do that as well. At least that's what I thought when I was reading through it and editing it for you, your story.
So this is a good point, and it actually makes me something I'm going to have to go back in and add a little more, because we're recording on Sunday, and I haven't finished it yet. But I think one of the things with Brook is that, like, what he did in terms of his switch was, like, accent a really good player and the modern game, and specifically, mm-hmm. really, the Budenholzer system, in a way that, like, made him even more valuable, right? Like, it's not like he was trying to do something that, like, didn't fit. Like, you and I, like, know, and it's a cliche, but it's like, guys will be like, the most important thing in the NBA is to know your role. Brook sort of figured out that, like, this is the version of himself that he needed to become. Obviously, there's underlying indicators that, like, this was possible. Like, his free throw shooting was always, like, a really good thing, something that Drummond's never, ever going to be good at. And that is, like, an indicator.
When you wrote, like, yeah, no, you're actually just about to say it. Go ahead.
Yeah, Drummond shot over 60% from the free throw line one time in his career. It was by 0.05%. Blake is, like, up at around 80%.
Brook is,
like, really good as a free throw shooter.
The worst he ever did was 70% with the Lakers, and other than that, it's been flirting between 78% and 82%, which is phenomenal for a big guy.
Yeah, that's better than some guards and some wings. And if you look at, like, indications of three-point success, there is a lot of data work that has been done that shows that free throw shooting can correlate to three-point shooting, particularly when the comparison point is often college to pros. But I think the logic still sort of works there. I haven't seen any data that would suggest that what I'm saying here is insane. If it is, I apologize. But Brook is, like, accenting a really good team and a really good system. What Drummond is, like, wanting to do is sort of, like, reshape the system around him doing more stuff. And when I think about this, I think I've articulated this badly when I've talked about this, because I'm not, like, anti-player trying to better themselves and, like, find new versions of themselves. I think all of us as human beings should be doing that. I think the problem is, like, knowing that, like, and also this is a Cavs problem, like, you know, if you don't take it in the right way or kind of cap it in the right way or steer it in the right direction, there's a lot of potentially harmful implications for the rest of your team. And I think that's what I worry about in the context of this.
Yeah, that's what I worry about, too, because that's an interesting point where you talk about how Brook slowly did bring along these improvements in his game, where he had a baseline criteria where he was an all-star caliber center for the longest time based on what he was doing. But then a little bit of the benefit of foreseeing the future is being able to add that three-point ability to your game and just rounding out your defensive game. Like, I do think that's product of the Budenholzer system, but, and this is more to your point, J.B. Bickerstaff is letting Andre, he's saying it without saying it, he's encouraging Andre freelancing as a ball handler, as a three-point shooter, which is fine if, like, it's every now and then, but, like, there's no, like, firm situation in the Cleveland system, unlike in Milwaukee's, where they have a set system under Budenholzer where it works, and then Brook's able to do these things every now and then. But, and the fact is, like, he's also reliable as a three-point shooter, and he's also reliable defensively, that Budenholzer is able to adapt his system to that, where more so Andre's just not very good at this because he's still trying it. And that's where it's kind of just acting more like a wrench in what Cleveland's trying to do instead of just another cog in their offensive system and helping this team grow and develop. And it's just kind of just frustrating. I think this is still the root of our frustration, is Andre has the potential to be a great center in the NBA and know his role and know where he fits in the grand scheme of not just Cleveland, but in all 30 teams in the league. But he's trying to be a square peg in a round hole at this point. And I think, again, that's just the root of my frustration. And I feel like it is for you as well.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back, talk about this a little bit more. And specifically kind of the way Drummond actually could, I think there's some ideas of, like, what he could do that would actually be kind of not just rim running and dunking, kind of as a context for him. But Evan, why don't you tell everyone about our sponsor before we do that?
Okay. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Please go support Rock Auto because they support us. And with that, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about some of the positives of Andre Drummond right after this. All right, Evan, let me just say this about Drummond. I think there is a path for him to do more than he has done if he wants to go back to something. And I found this piece by Ian Levy really, really interesting in thinking about this. The Pistons, pre-having Blake really use him from the elbow as kind of a facilitator and such, I think at the very least, like, it does kind of create some of the complexities of the offense that I think it's hard for the Cavs to complete otherwise. I think an underrated thing that we haven't talked about is that Kevin Love, despite being like one of the best elbow players of the last 10 years, like, doesn't really do that anymore for whatever reason. Drummond kind of doing that with Kevin as a spacer, or Nance as a spacer, considering I think Larry's three-point shooting is real, and I think that's going to be something the Cavs encourage him to do. There's a path to do that, but I think I think if it only really works if it doesn't result in him like taking James Harden step back threes at the same time.
Yeah, I think you triggered some PTSD mentioning that step back, because I still remember Andre's step back. Like, I don't know, man. It's just like, if Cleveland is able to better utilize operating Andre from the elbow, like they said they tried to for the longest time with Kevin, and it's just kind of, you know, come and gone, where I don't think they're ever really going to integrate into the offense. I want to see him do it, but just Cleveland's in a weird situation right now. Like, the Jason Lloyd, again, we're recording this on Sunday, his final thoughts came out, and it was only going to quit blip, talking about how Dan Gilbert is taking Quick in public, which, you know, is a big deal for his financial stakes as an owner and also the Cavs' overall value, because that skyrockets things, but that's a story for another day. But he did mention the fact that the Cavs are, or at least Dan is, putting the pressure on Kobe Altman, who is the first general manager under Dan, to get an extension to be contending for the playoffs next season. And I don't know how cute you want to get with Andre Drummond. Like, I feel like JB Bickerstaff really needs to tamper down like all this freelancing and like encouraging all this bad behavior. Well, at least what you and I think is bad behavior. And
okay, like, can I just say this, Evan? I'm just gonna say this pretty bluntly. Andre Drummond shooting threes and not trying hard is bad. It is not like the scale of like things that people are like saying out in public right now that are actually stupid. Dwight Howard, looking at you. Yeah. But like, it is just, there's no argument to me that like Andre Drummond trying to shoot three pointers is like going to help or potentially help in any way. Especially,
that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, but it's especially like, if needs like, to discourage you want to be the eighth seed next year. Yeah, like eight.
If you want to like try your heart out to be the eighth seed and get slaughtered by the Bucks, like Andre can't shoot threes.
God,
he can't.
Bless you. Yeah, like the Bucks will. Hey, maybe he'll get a first-hand experience of what does and doesn't work with Brook Lopez, because Andre had to go up against him if the Cavs do get the 8 seed. But it's just, yeah, no, I think that's like the Cavs' best step is just to tell, like, just tell him bluntly, like, stop shooting threes, stop trying to bring the ball up. We're trying to build around Colin Sexton, who is arguably the second or third best player, if you, depending on how you feel about Kevin Love. Like, trying to build around him and Darius Garland and Kevin Porter, and like, you are brought in to make them better. We didn't bring you in for you for them to play alongside you, kind of. So that's at least that's the impression I got when they brought in Andre. Is like, no, they're bringing him. Obviously, they're bringing him in to raise the talent level in Cleveland, but also to help elevate these young guards in their development. And he's the antithesis of that right now. And that's, again, another root of my frustration with Andre Drummond, and I think JB Bickerstaff as well, because he doesn't want to tell him, Andre, stop shooting three, stop taking step back, stop trying to be the ball handler. It's not working, and it hasn't worked to this point in your career. Why is it going to work now? And I know we can point at like the Brook Lopez situation, but Andre hasn't slowly brought along this part of his game. He's just suddenly trying to add it after 7 years. Like, that's not going to work. That's not realistic.
Right. I'm going to give you the choice here. Do you want to talk about the defensive angle of this, or do you want to talk about the J.B. Bickerstaff coaching impact of this in terms of like his need to be able to set the tone and kind of organize things how he wants to?
Let's talk about defense, because defense wins championships, even though defense is for nerds if you're the Ty Lue Cavaliers in the regular season.
Tire fire defensive team. Worst team ever. God. Their sword, a defensive sword, is just stuck on the Cavaliers' sheath on the side of their body. Okay. Evan, when I was doing research for this, I went back and read this Grantland RIP column that Zach Lowe, the great Zach Lowe, wrote called Brooklyn's Brook Lopez Problem. And the subhead is, the Nets' big man is the biggest reason New York's new team isn't a real contender. This is linked in the piece when it goes up, so you can find it. He talks about his defense, and it's basically like he can't move that well. He's kind of slow-footed, but he, like, knows what he's doing, and he tries, and he can drop, and he, like, is at least able to, like, cognizantly know what's going on the floor. Defense has obviously changed a lot then. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I understand all the nuances. But, like, if you just compare that to what he is now, like, the template for Brook being, like, a stalwart defensive player was probably always just kind of there. It's just, like, it has worked out somehow, and I would read a long, long piece about that. The Drummond side of it is, like, the indicators that he, like, knows how to use his frame in a way and, like, maximize what he can at least do as an athlete, because he's a better athlete than Brook, like, just has never been apparent there. And that's the other problem with this is it's, like, if he's, like, if you're going to have, Drummond's never going to be perfect. Like, very few players are going to provide you perfect basketball on both ends of the floor, but, like, if there's this double impact of, like, he's not trying on defense and he's doing whatever he wants on offense, like, there's just no upside to that. And that's, like, the concern, I think, of things going down the path that it kind of went for him to Detroit a little bit, and kind of some of the early kind of unfair for us to judge everything returns in Cleveland.
I guess my question to you is, though, how much of it is the fact that Dre didn't respond to John Beilein as head coach, and the fact that he didn't play a lot under JB? So I guess this leads into the other question as well, is like, maybe Andre just came in unmotivated, knowing like this is a lost cause season, and maybe if we got an extended window with him into the remainder of however many games Cleveland had left, maybe we get to see a Dre that you and I can both palate as a long-term option in Cleveland, because let's be frank, the Cavs are exploring extension talks with Andre as we record this. So for all we know, by the time this episode drops, the Cavs and Andre could agree to an extension, and I can rip my hair out over the numbers. Whatever, that's a story for another day. But yeah, no, we saw just quickly and alarmingly in the 8 games he played with Cleveland, just like all the complaints and all the problems and all the warnings that you and I both got from people who cover the Pistons closely, saying like, yeah, no, this is why Andre didn't work in Detroit. And a lot of those problems reared their ugly head in rapid succession in that limited window with Cleveland. But I guess at the same time, like, how much do you think is if we had more time with him as JB, as his coach, like, they could tamper down and, like, discourage his bad behavior? But at the same time, just based on JB's body language and responses, like, that's my problem. It isn't going to change.
It's unknowable. I think that's an unknowable question. That's probably the biggest
and
limitation
in
this.
You'll never get a straight answer from JB about it either.
No, I mean, I say this understanding, like, you're not winning any PR battles by doing this. Like, you're never going to get brutally honest answers from coaches about their players in that sense. You're going to get it from the people that have the access to get the back channeling sources stuff. There's an argument that is not actually productive.
Everybody, but yeah.
But I mean, generally speaking, like, you're not getting, like, JB is not going to be like ripping Andre in the media unless there's a reason to it. Ty was one of the few guys that could do it, and it was only like in certain instances when he would do it.
Yeah, no, Ty pick and chose his battles because he had the respect of that locker room, but commanding the respect of LeBron, who in turn commands the respect of the locker room, is a dangerous game to try and play in. So if you have it, you try and maintain it, and you just pick and choose your battles. But yeah, no, I just I guess this is the other problem, too, is if Ty was still the head coach of Cleveland, I wonder how quickly he would shut this bullshit down with Andre versus JB, where we talk about how JB is just like a safety blanket and is a diet version of what Ty brings to Cleveland, but I wonder what the difference would be if Ty was still the head coach. Like, would we see these problems from Andre if Cleveland traded for him?
Well, I think even, like, if they were just better, it's unknowable, but if they were just, like, 10% of a better team and not so clearly a dumpster fire,
I don't want to seem like a total cynic, but I feel like this Cleveland roster, no matter how you shake it, wasn't going to make the playoffs, no matter who was coaching it. Like, Ty's is the best coach in franchise history, but I don't think...
Just between you and me, because no one else is listening, you're right. The Cavs are never going to make the playoffs, and those are bad expectations.
Okay, that's fair. I think that's a good stopping point for us to jump ship into the next segment.
Yeah, look, I am curious to see how this plays out. I think this is one of the more dominating stories. I think about it more than I would like to admit.
I miss the Cavs, but I don't miss this part of the Cavs.
Well, you'd look, buddy, I'm just saying, if he's in the bubble, bombs away in Chicago. Deeper threes than his threes will be deeper than the deep dish pizza he'll be consuming.
Deep dish pizza's overrated and sucks.
Anyway, it's trash. So. It's casserole.
It's casserole. It's
casserole. Well, I'm glad we agree on that. That makes me happy.
It's sauce soup with a cheesy layer, and it's just disappointing.
Give me a nice New York slice any day of the week. But, Evan, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about this piece you wrote at Forbes about Kevin Love right after this. All right, Evan, let's talk about Kevin Love. Give me your pitch to trade him to the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, as we all know, the Cavs are away, so it is a tough time to find actual things to talk about. And shout out to Twitter pal Billy Reinhardt, who covers the Nets a lot more closely than Chris and I do, for obvious reasons. This is a Cavaliers podcast. But he pitched the idea of me originally of the Nets trading for Kevin Love, and I just took his pitch and wrote about like my actual thoughts on it. But his pitch for him would be Garrett Temple, Taurean Prince, and then Jared Allen as sweetener. And he also included 2 seconds as well in this trade, and he said, do you think this is a fair offer? And then I told him, like, I'd drive Kevin to the airport for that offer to begin with, but, like, if you gave me Garrett Temple, Taurean Prince, and Jared Allen for Kevin Love, again, I'd drive him to the airport for that, because it's a trade that works out for Kevin, it's a trade that works out for Brooklyn, and obviously it's a trade that works out for Cleveland, a team that needs help on the perimeter in terms of Prince and in terms of Temple. And then you also have Jared Allen, who is surprisingly only 22 years old. I thought he was a lot older than he actually was when I started doing research for this. Like, fits in perfectly with Cleveland's timeline, gives them an option not to extend Andre Drummond because he does everything Andre Drummond does but better. And just kind of, it all works out nicely. And I think it's, I don't think it's a trade that would realistically happen, but if you told me Kevin Love was on his way to Brooklyn, I think I'd be pretty happy for all parties involved.
What do you do with Andre if you trade for Jared Allen? Like, how do you handle that? I guess, like, it's my biggest question.
I channel some of that Justin Rowan optimism about this team and the fact that that Giannis still hasn't declared his intentions with the Bucks yet. Granted, this changes a lot. The Kevin Love landscape changes a lot if Giannis signs that Supermax with Milwaukee, but you take Andre, who we all know is accepting that player option, because from at least what I was told, he's not going to get $28.7 million on the open market this year just because of the pandemic and because of the fact he's a traditional center, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can, plenty of, like, ifs and everything else, but if Giannis doesn't declare his intentions, you can kind of copy the Brooklyn model. Maybe you have Andre as the starter, and then you have Jared coming off the bench, or you have Jared as the starter, and Andre serving as that DeAndre Jordan role coming off the bench, whatever. You kind of just tamper that. I think JV has enough clout in that locker room to make it work and find a semblance of peace for a little bit, but you just try and use that expiring to get a team who's trying to clear as much salary cap space in free agency the following year as possible with Andre's 28.7 expiring, and they feel like that's just what Cleveland's approach is. And that's just me being the optimist, though, is that there's a team out there who's really looking to shed almost $30 million in cap space and try and take on Andre Drummond along the way.
Do you like the Kevin fit in Brooklyn?
I do. I think it works well as a complimentary piece because they were playing Taurean Prince at the power forward. They're trying to play Wilson Chandler at power forward. They're trying to just like plug and play pieces. And the Brooklyn situation was a bit of a long pitch because Kyrie can't really stay healthy to begin with, and I think this extended time off helps him. Kevin Durant wasn't coming back this year, and then you roll into next season with Kyrie, Spencer Dinwiddie at the 2, Kevin Durant at the 3, Kevin Love at the 4, DeAndre Jordan at the 5. That's arguably one of the best teams in the league that I think that can go toe to toe with the Lakers, and definitely could go toe to toe with Milwaukee because it's Giannis and a lot of really good complementary pieces that fit well in the Budenholzer system. the head coaching thing is a big thing as well. And I think if you hire, if you trade for Kevin, bringing in Ty Lue makes a lot of sense. And no, I think it just works out nicely for Kevin where he can play for a championship contender, and he's already used playing the third fiddle with Kyrie. It would be nice to put Kevin in a winning situation versus watching him just kind of waste away in a bad situation in Cleveland.
I'll say this. If you get Jared Allen, I really like that as a good young piece to build with. I'm pro that. That to me is like a good Kevin Love return. If you can get that, that makes a lot of sense to me.
So you're telling me you were not a fan of the James Heisman Instagram highlight video I sent you with three of the steam nose emojis. Like, I call that the Colin Sexton emoji because I feel like that's Sexton's mood all the time.
Yes. But,
so you're telling me the Jared Allen dunk to Kendrick Lamar, where every single dunk was like a boost-based moment, like that didn't do anything for you?
Not especially, no.
Okay, that's fair. But yeah, no, Jared Allen would be a good consolation prize. There's something special about Texas and big guys with Tristan and Jared Allen and everybody else that's just come out of the Texas program lately. Shout out to Shaka Smart, former Akron assistant. But
okay.
Just a quick shout out. Yeah, but okay. Jared Allen would be a lot of fun in Cleveland.
Good stylistic fit behind Colin and Darius, and frankly every other Cavs player they have, because they have literally no proven wing defenders on the team.
Well, good stylistically as well in terms of hair, if Kevin Porter brings back super tall haircut with Colin, Jared, and KPJ. The best looking team on and off the court.
Darius just needs to do the Jedi look all the time.
Oh my god, that reminds me that I have a video of him after he got drafted where ESPN filmed it for like Twitter or something, and it made me cringe, so I saved it. But it's like him giving a thumbs up after he's drafted, saying he's stoked. And whenever you mention the Jedi robes, for some reason it makes me think of that.
It's fair. Let me ask you this, Evan, as kind of a wrap up here. Where are you at on just your, what is your, it's hard to know like what the cap looks like for any of this, and that kind of for me really puts us in a tight fit in terms of like projecting out trades and stuff, because these salary cap situations are just weird. But do you think a Kevin thing makes sense in a vacuum?
It all depends if Giannis signs the Supermax with Milwaukee or not, because arguably Kevin is the best available talent in terms of like, he's the best available B talent in for like the teams who strike out free agency on some of the bigger names that year summer. But I don't know. I think a trade's realistic, but I think for fans that are listening, just go in with low expectations, just because the cap will be lowered because of the pandemic. And Kevin didn't do himself a lot of favors this year in terms of getting traded to begin with. So in a lot of factors that are already going against him on top of that, it could definitely lower his chances. But hey, I'm holding out hope that Brooklyn's going to do it. And it was a fun thought exercise, at least.
Yeah, that's okay. I think it's worth thinking about. I wonder what other options might be out there for Kevin, and I guess we'll see in terms of what the market actually looks like. But, Evan, let's wrap it up there for this one. We're going to do a whole double awards thing this week. That's going to be both giving our actual picks for the different NBA awards and also giving our picks on who the Cavs pick. If this was just a Cavs-only award, who would we pick for them? I think we've certainly alluded to them over time, but that's going to be our show later this week.
For the Cavs one.
Say that again.
I have a good hypothetical for the Cavs one. Don't worry.
Can't wait. We're very excited to dive into that. And again, we're back to 5 days a week, so book club on Friday, and we're going to keep churning stuff out. So thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us. Please wear a mask. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.